We're actually on. It says that we have a reminder and that there's one person waiting to get on. Oh no, it's.
You know, it might just have started. It might have, because I told it to go the first time and I thought it went because my box went away that it said, you know, starting broadcast.
Oh,
So
okay.
our internet might have briefly choked.
Okay, well,
And it
then
didn't
we have to
happen.
take it from the top.
All right, I guess we do.
All right.
Let's go.
From the high plains in the great American Midwest, I bid you all good evening, good morning, good afternoon, whatever the case may be. I'm John Wilder, and this is Bant to Bant. And if this sounds familiar, do not adjust your radio dial. This is just the very special 24th live edition of Bombs and Bants. West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hello, thank you.
Does this seem like it's live or Memorex? East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
See, this is why I need multiple monitors so I can see all of these screens at the same time.
Understood. And apologies to those of you in the audience. We got a little bit of a late start. And the reason we got that late start is that a button wasn't pressed or something.
No, I
So
think our internet just dropped out.
yeah. So we actually had about 12 minutes worth of streaming going. And then I looked and I said, it says people are waiting, not here waiting. So good evening. And I think it's excellent to be here tonight. And even though we're a little bit late starting, I feel fantastic. And I think we're going to have a great show for the ages. And we'll step back and say, how did we get here? And when the missus and I met, it turned out we both listened to Art Bell, who is, or actually was, one of the greatest broadcasters in American history. Art was a bit weird, sure, but that was the best part about him. He struck just the perfect balance of taking a guest at face value, but also skewering the guest with fact whenever it was there. On one particular evening, I even helped skewer a guest who, as I recall, was never asked back on again. Remember that, the missus?
I do. And you know, Art could hold a grudge against
Oh,
guests that
yes,
he
he
thought
could.
burned him. Yeah. You
Yeah,
know, and I will
and
say
what
this, I want to say this about Art, is that Rush Limbaugh may have saved AM radio. Art made it interesting.
absolutely. And I'll note this, you know, this particular guest, what he had done is he had sent Art some pictures, and he told Art that these pictures were taken above 14,000 feet. Now, I don't know how familiar y'all are with geography, but there's just not a lot of acres above 14,000 square feet in the entire United States. And in fact, I think I've seen with my naked eye about 90% of them. And the one thing they all have in common is not a single tree. And Robert Ghostwolf, who was actually an Italian guy,
Oh, you're gonna
and
name and shame, huh?
oh, absolutely. He's actually an Italian guy. Well, he's dead, so you know, so
I got you. You can't slander the dead, so you're off the hook.
that's right. Well, and he also smoked like a chimney when he was on Art Bell, so he was claiming to be at 14,000 feet, and there's no way, there's just no way that happened. So anyway, I got that message off to Art Bell on the internet, and Art questioned him on it live on the air. And skewered him, and he was never on back, never on again. I just loved it.
It was a micro
So,
environment.
Art was
That's
it
been
was a
like
microclimate.
25 years ago.
Yeah. One day I'll take down Phil Plait. I hate Phil Plait. You know how much I hate
Phil Plait, don't you? I do.
Because he's a fraud. Same reason with the Polter pup. He's a fraud. It's probably more than you wanted to know about us. But tonight we're going to do this a little bit different. We're going to talk about either some paranormal experience or paranormal story. And in addition, we'll have two commercials, one of which is even visual. The missus has been working like a squirrel on amphetamines to put this work together for you. So just letting you know. And we'll finish up the entire thing with Crap a Politician Says, which is a feature that's on a tryout tonight for a first run. So that's a little bit of the front side of what we're doing. And Mark, how's it going?
It's going good.
Yeah, you know, from a paranormal standpoint, now I understand you were probably not a listener to Coast to Coast on a regular basis.
No, I only listened to it maybe a few times, and I don't think I even listened to the whole thing. It was just segments or whatever.
Yeah, and you know, I again, one of the things about art is the more you listen to them, the more it grows on you. And in fact, the missus and I are even still listening to him now, even though he's passed on, because he's just wonderful to sleep to. He's got this deep, mellow voice.
But yet at the same time, he's always interesting. And he always, he was just a consummate interviewer. He could bring out the most interesting things about his guests.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he could talk to someone for 4 hours, and it would never get boring. So he was just wonderful about, and he didn't repeat himself. He was always on like a laser. Just a great talent. So, the missus, you've had a lot of creativity going on. What's up with that? I mean, are you literally a squirrel on amphetamines?
No, you know what? I just have a lot more time right now. So
and that's good.
And yeah, I actually have time to get things done, which is nice.
So in other words, in the immortal words of another great talent that's passed, Rodney Dangerfield. So will you call me when you have no class?
Okay. So always, that's how we ended up getting married.
Yeah, there you go.
So you know, although I did see a very funny story today as I was just thumbing through stuff before we went on here. And it was, and this happened in China, but this young woman was on her way. Yes, was on the way for a blind date with a guy. And while she was at his house, they locked down the place where they were. And so they ended up locked down together for a month. And now they're engaged.
Well, that's just a match made in stocking.
It's a positive COVID story. And then I heard another good positive COVID story today, too, is that this young woman who used a fake positive COVID test to get out of a bad blind date.
Mm-hmm.
See, silver lining to every cloud, right?
Yes, indeed. So, all right. I have a big wheel that I've made up. It's like exactly like the Wheel of Fortune wheel, except it has nothing but paranormal experiences on it. So I'm going to give it a big spin. We don't have that sound effect, apparently. So
you didn't ask for that. Sorry.
No, I didn't ask for that. So our first story goes to something that is or might be dealing with a ghost. Anyone have one of those?
Well, I have a personal one.
Okay. Is it a ghost story?
It is. It is.
It's not an Italian ghost, is it?
No.
Because
no.
I hear with those you have to use a Luigi board.
I was on at that time.
No. So this one's just personal. I, you know, just to as a background, I don't have any other stories that have to do with paranormal. Just this. But, you know, from a personal perspective, you know, I've never seen a UFO or encountered Bigfoot or anything, but, anyway, this was when I was young. We lived in this. My parents rented this old farmhouse, and this is where we lived. Probably dating back to around 1900 or so, and there was this lean-to addition on one side of it. It had all this really, really old stuff, like a genuine wood-fired cooking stove. You know, not your just a heating stove. I mean, this had the different drawers and sections and so forth for cooking and the top, and just really old furniture. And apparently, it was where this old guy had lived on this farm, and he'd sold it to the current owners and moved it. He'd actually had lived in that area, in that lean-to, until the farmers that owned the place had built a new house and they put an apartment in for him. And when I was young, he'd fallen and cracked his head on concrete. And anyway, you know, ended up passing away. So this is probably, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 years later and stuff. But I was sick. I had a bedroom in the basement, but when I was sick, my parents would have me sleep in the living room on the couch so that I would be close, you know, to where they are. And, you know, we're talking, I was probably like 4, 5, 6, right in that range. And anyway, I had been sick, and I woke up this one night, well, I was laying on the couch, and from the couch, I could just look right into where the dining room was. And there was this hallway that extended from the dining room to back towards the kitchen and stuff area. And as I'm looking, this out of this hallway comes this black, like a figure, almost like a figure in a hood or a cloak or something. But it just floated along and went right through a door into a different room where I couldn't see it. And there was no sound. And you know, it's sort of weird because, you know, it was black, it wasn't white, but yet I could still make it out. It was just really weird. Anyway.
That's pretty good story. I mean, were there any features to it? Could you maybe discern a face or?
There's a little bit more to it. I mean, So that's all that happened at that time. And I didn't say anything to anyone about it because, you know, I wasn't sure if I was dreaming it or whatever. And I didn't want my brothers to make fun of me or anything. But years later, so like I probably would have been a tween or teenage at that point. But I happened to mention it to one of my brothers, and he had seen a similar figure, except he saw it actually coming down the hallway towards him, because he was in the kitchen at one time late in the night and stuff. So I don't know, you know, I don't know whether it was the guy, the guy had lived there, his ghost, and died or what. I mean, it you know, the fact that my brother confirmed it, you know, that his own experience sort of, you know, gave it a veracity that I wouldn't have had for it earlier. But anyway, it was interesting.
And I'm going to quote Eddie Murphy at this point, is a wonderful house, honey. Get out. Too bad we can't stay. Oh, you know, and I, boy, and that sounds like a shadow person.
Yeah.
Is what it sounds like more than anything else. Because if you're not discerning any sort of features to it. And we did actually have one friend that you know, stone cold sober, he said that he saw that that's a similar sort of thing happen. And and again, yeah, I think I'll break the lease for that. the missus, is your story going to be about ghosts?
Yeah, sure, since we're on that topic.
Okay.
And since you were there for this.
Yeah, now I have heard that ghosts drink a lot of alcohol because they're really into booze.
Don't! I was ready for that one too. All right, so here's my ghost story. And this actually happened to our family. me and John and the two older girls. And we were all in our old house and downstairs, and we'd been playing a game. And the way our house was set up is that the front door was directly above where the couch was downstairs. And so when you came in the front door, you could either go downstairs into the basement or just walk straight across the floor into the upper level of the house. And so if someone came in the front door and walked across, I mean, you could very clearly hear footsteps above you in the room above. So this is where we were downstairs, all four of us. And we had been playing a board game or something. And it was one of those moments where everyone had gone, ah, ha, 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 ha. Oh, and then it's quiet for a minute. And then at that exact instant, above us, as if someone had walked, came in our front door. The door did not open. But as if someone had come in our front door and walked across the floor, and all four of us heard it. And, you know, went upstairs, looked around, nobody was there. But playing his day, I heard those four footsteps.
Ooh, poltergeist.
Something, yeah.
And that just shows you how much I would go to hide me. The reason that I ate that entire cherry pie without letting anyone know. No, I'm kidding, of course. No, that was strange, because it was, you know, you could look and go, who is that? And I remember walking upstairs and everything secure, nothing unusual at all, except for those sounds. So,
yeah. And like I said, all four of us heard it. And it's clearly one of the most inexplicable things that, you know, I had witnesses to, so.
Yes, yes. And so I've got one. And again, talking about your youth, when I was young and I still had my Schwinn Stingray that was metallic blue with the banana seat.
Not to mention all a full head of hair.
Oh, yeah, that's been a while. So I was driving my wonderful bicycle, and I was headed down to the river, and there's a river near where I live, and you know exactly what I'm talking about, the yep. Misses, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so there's this little road, and it's a little dirt road, and it's probably a quarter, half mile long, and it's about twilight, and so I'm, you know, for whatever reason, I am going as fast as I can. I'm trying to get down there in a hurry by myself. And I look up, and there's this single pine tree, and it's kind of a majestic pine, and it's got a, you know, big base, and you know, it's probably 12 feet to the lowest branch, and this is like a ponderosa pine. And so I'm zooming as fast as I can, and I look, and underneath that branch, it's like the world isn't there for a part of it. It's like there is a slight split in reality. And it's like an opening where all you saw were just, you know, again, I'm 10 or 11, right? Like you could kind of, it's like a hole into space almost. And it never before, never again. And you know what? I've told myself, is like, you know, I was probably low on oxygen, and I was probably getting ready to pass out, and that was probably losing my vision, even though that's never happened before or since. But I thought that was just one of the strangest things that's ever happened. And there's no punchline to it, and it's just a strange thing that happened.
Just because you're a weirdo.
It is. It is. Does anybody have a Bigfoot story?
Well, I mean, we live here where I grew up my entire life, and there are no forests here.
Yep.
I mean, there's trees and stuff, but you can't really call them forests.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, and I really think that probably none of us have a Bigfoot story. Again, I'm assuming you don't, Mark.
No, I don't. I closest I've got is an in-law that heard a weird cry one night.
I think Bigfoot's shy because he owes Chuck Norris money. Okay.
So I wasn't ready for that one.
well, okay, I got two more. because if we don't have a Bigfoot story, I'm going to use all my Bigfoot material right now. How does Bigfoot tell time?
On his big watch.
Sasquatch.
Oh.
A Sasquatch. And what does Bigfoot do on leg day? Sasquats.
Yeah, they were all pretty awful. But I do have an actual cryptid story. It's not a Bigfoot story, but it's a cryptid story.
Go forth.
All right. So I was probably 14 years old. And it was a very cold spring day. Maybe February, March, that time of year. And I had, my brother and I had a three-wheeled ATV that we tore around on, much like the one that I banged up my knee on over the summer trying to relive my misspent youth. But anyway, so I spent a lot of time riding around on that. And I can remember coming home one afternoon and, you know, 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, I was zipping down the dirt road by our house. And I came to the intersection where one way went to another very small town that was nearby. And the other way went down into the river bottoms where the farmland was. And so crossing in front of me across the road, the intersection, probably, I don't know, 50, 100 yards in front of me, was some sort of creature. And I slammed on the brakes on the ATV and watched this creature walk across the road. And what it looked to me like, for all the world, was a black panther. Because it was larger than a dog, but it moved very cat-like, and it had a very cat-like tail.
Now, be careful. We'll probably irritate the Marvel's copyrights on this.
Exactly. But anyway, it freaked me out, and I turned around and hightailed it home, and I told my mom and dad about it. And my mom told me some story about, well, I think I heard something about there was like some circus train that that animals had escaped. And I was like, oh, okay, well, that satisfied 14-year-old me. And then, of course, many years later, as I'm listening to Coast, and I think really probably it was Ian Punnett that I heard this from, because Ian's really big into cryptids, right? And he had said something about when you see these animals like this who are in places that they shouldn't be, often that's the story that goes along with it, is that it's some sort of circus train that has had an accident or they've lost animals or something, and that these kind of odd animals that are living out there where they shouldn't be. And I was like, oh, guess that's what that was then.
And it also might explain your relatives.
That my relatives are cryptids?
You know that they were...
I'm confused. When the circus train wrecked,
yeah, they were stranded.
That's why they're here. They were on the circus train. It wrecked a long, long time ago, and they went, that's a nice place. We'll just stay.
All right, you better bumper us to the first commercial, dear.
Okay, you want a bumper to the first commercial.
Yeah, you just run it from here.
As the Omicron variant of COVID-19 ravages the nation in its pernicious grip, it's more important than ever that we redouble our so far successful efforts to stop the spread, with social distancing, washing our hands, and the ever-important masking. But, like many of us over the past few weeks, I mean months, no wait, it's years now, you may have gotten lax in your masking technique. In fact, you probably have never been doing it right all along. So here's a helpful guide on how to put on your mask the correct way. The most important part of masking is that you have a good quality mask, like an N95 mask, or a cheap paper mask made in China, or maybe something made from an old t-shirt you've had in your bottom desk drawer for 15 years. Slap some ear straps on that baby and watch the security ensue. Okay, maybe that isn't the best way. The most important part is that you have a good snug fit against your face to keep all those bad germs out. Step 1. After your cloth mask is covering your cake hole, apply a generous layer of brand name cling wrap. You'll want to make sure to get a nice long piece so it can go around your entire head. The primary mistake most mask wearers make is not getting a long enough piece, because then you have to do it all again. Now smack it into place to make sure it covers both your mouth and nose. This can be a challenging part of putting on your mask, especially if you don't really have ears. In such an event, use some high-quality clear packing tape to secure your mask against your earless head. Don't worry if you can't really see. In proper mask wearing, eyesight isn't really so important. Step 2. Find some good duct tape. You know, the kind that sticks to anything and stays there. As with the cling wrap, make sure you get a good long strip that's capable of going around your ample noggin. This is an important step, so don't skimp on the tape. With both hands, secure the first strip of tape around the upper edge of the mask, making sure that you leave no gaps where germs might escape, or worse, get in. Finish things up with another ample strip of tape at the bottom. Pat it good and hard to ensure a good quality seal. Or find a family member who has issues with you to do the job just right, and using both hands. Ta-da! You are securely masked and can comfortably breathe for the next 8 to 10 hours.
Wildcard Live. Call in at 1-800-555-1212. All right. We're back. And very, very good. Very well done. And so who wants to go next with the next kind of little unusual story?
I've got one.
Okay, and what is it about?
Okay, this is from an article called Mysteries in the Mountains. It was published on May 15th, 2003 in the Tucson Weekly, and it is an anecdotal story from a guy named Ron Quinn. And I came across this a long time ago. I have no idea how I first came across it, but it was a really interesting story because it reminded me of the Haunted Mesa.
In fact, I know I read that because you featured it on your website.
Yeah, I did at one time.
And it's a great little story, and reminded me of, for instance, Jules Verne, but Edgar Rice Burroughs. It was like something Edgar Rice Burroughs would have written.
Yeah, the article begins with, you know, the site that this Quinn guy was writing about was near the border and south, I think it was southeast Arizona. Let's see. But anyway, it is from a guy named Ron Quinn, who apparently, according to this, has published stories in the Arizona Highways, Treasure Magazine, and Fate. But anyway, they say the Weekly does not know the location of the site Mr. Quinn speaks of, nor could we verify the events mentioned. Therefore, we present as anecdotes and interesting stories, nothing more. But basically, what it is it's a collection of some events and stories that were passed on to him from Indians that had lived in the area, and I think a cowboy or rock, or maybe it was a prospector. But essentially what it was there was like this rock archway or sort of set up where people could apparently pass through it, and at certain times, you know, they could look through it and it would show like a different season or something, but they could pass through it and go through time.
Yeah, and that was one of the things I thought was especially fascinating, was the idea that you could look through it, and then eventually he did pass through it as well.
Yeah, and they could hear noises through it. And here's one of the stories. I'll just put out this one simple one. John, who I think is the prospector that he was talking to, told us around the 1800s, three Indians were hunting, and upon returning to their village, discovered a stone archway. Being in a jubilant mood, they began chasing one another through the opening in a playful manner. Moments later, one jumped through but never emerged from the opposite side. Fearing they had entered some sacred ground of the gods, the remaining two fled the scene. Arriving at the village, they told the medicine man how their friend had vanished before their eyes. As the story spread, others journeyed to the high plateau to gaze upon the stone structure. Rocks and other items were tossed through, but nothing occurred until an elderly woman approached. Tossing in a live rabbit, it suddenly vanished. The Indians backed off in fear and spread the story of this doorway to the gods as it came to be known. Anyway, and that's just one anecdote. To me,
this has all the hallmarks of a really great story. It mysterious structure, dates back to the Native Americans, and lost areas and can't go back. I really like all the different parts to it. I always thought that was a great little story.
It is. It's a fun little story. The prospector, you know, this is one of these instances where he, you know, about the different time periods that sort of flies in, comes in. He in 1948 had passed by the archway, and even though it was really stormy, when he looked through the archway, the sky was blue and no clouds were visible. So it's just, anyway, that, and he collected some other stories and so forth about this, and it's really interesting. And if you guys want to look that up, the Tucson Weekly's website still has it.
Okay. We'll see if we can't get the missus to post a link to it. Sure. You know, that this brings another story. I was camping high up in the Rockies, but this was a particular area that was known for gold mining. And there were several cabins there. And so we're camped out there. And these cabins had been vacated, actually built around 1890. Ish, right before the big Alaska gold rush. In fact, all the miners had left their claims when they heard about the Alaska gold rush. And so I'm camping there one night, and we're near a creek and a stream. So you hear the burbling and the babbling of the water as it goes down. And you know, as I was laying and slowly going out to sleep, I thought, it sounds like someone is singing Camp Town Races. Nah, it just must be the rain noise. And so somebody that I was hiking with the next morning, you know, we're having breakfast and we're sitting around the campfire having some coffee. And so, you know, it's a funny thing. You know, last night as I was going to sleep, I swear I could hear someone saying Camp Town Races. They went, yes, me too. And I just thought that was, again, not necessarily ghostly, just a strange little occurrence, a little coincidence.
But yet another incident where someone could verify that it happened, that you weren't crazy.
Yes. I just found that very fascinating. But you know what we need to do is we have another commercial that's burning and ready to go.
Mom, what's for dinner?
Hey, moms, is this a question you get every night?
And when you answer, all you hear is,
"Again? That's so boring."
Well, you can make your dinners go from no way to oh yay with a little help from Human Burger Helper. When the kids get tired of the same old thing, night after night, try some tasty, nutritious cannibalism. And it's easy to prepare. In just under 30 minutes, you can have a hot, tasty meal on the table and ready to eat. All you have to add is the meat. So give the neighbors a call and have them over for dinner with new Human Burger Helper. And hear your family go from to,
yeah! "Hey, Mom, can I have seconds?"
"Of course, dear. The Petersons have a big family, and we have Human Burger Helper."
Yeah!
Yummy! That's your cue to start talking.
Absolutely. And welcome back. So, first time caller line, 1-800-555-1212. All right. Jim notes great music. So, great job picking the songs tonight, the missus.
Well, thank you. And actually, I didn't pick them. Art picked them, so.
Yeah, Art did pick them, but you picked the ones that he picked. So, I've got, anybody have any more? I have one more that I saw. Anybody have any more?
I do. I have another one that I'm not going to go through the whole thing. I'm just going to mention it because, again, this is one that you can find on the web.
Sure.
Do you want to share yours first, or do you want me to do?
No, go for it.
Okay. This one, and it's likely that anybody who's interested in the subject of mysteries and so forth probably has already heard about this, but the April 5th, 1909 edition of the Arizona Gazette published an article called "Explorations in Grand Canyon," and it's a big long article of a Smithsonian expedition or financed expedition there to a tunnel that had been discovered by a guy named G.E. Kincaid, and it was of what they described as a Oriental or possibly Egyptian artifacts and writing and everything all in this large cave in the Grand Canyon area. And anyway, the story is really cool. It goes into a lot of details about it, but the thing is the Smithsonian has no records of this, at least that they tell anyone, and no one's sure whether this was just some elaborate hoax by the Arizona Gazette or if it was a serious story. If there a lot of the artifacts were gold, so it's very possible that it got melted down and put in Fort Knox. But anyway, it's a cool story if you can ever come across it.
Yeah, I've read that one several times. And you know, one other thing that happened in and around that time frame, when we were in Fairbanks, we read in the News Miner how they had reported and sent dispatches back down to the lower 48 that they had found this Eden-like warm paradise just north of the Brooks Range. And yeah, I think there was a bit of leg pulling that went on in and around that time.
So as a former media person myself, I can attest to the fact that media people love to do that to their listeners and their readers. One radio station I worked for, we put together this entire fake concert that was going on like over Labor Day weekend at one of the nearby lakes. And really, it was just all of our DJs had gotten together and done fake stage announcements. We were playing live versions of songs. And so it was all weekend people calling in and saying, "How did I not know about this concert? I've driven all around the lake and I can't see anything." So, yeah, it's a thing we like to do.
It's funny. So I guess I have the one last one. Unless you have something to miss, do you?
Oh, no, go ahead. You can take the last one if you want.
And this one is not particularly
compelling.
Strange.
It's not really interesting at all.
Well, no, it's not perplexing. It's just, I found it very odd, and I can't quite explain it. But so I was living, I was in my living room in our house. Again, I'm 10, 11, 12 years old. And I have the binoculars out, and I'm you know, goofing around because there's no such thing as the internet. And I was not interested in watching The Price is Right. And soap operas, blah. And so I had the binoculars out, and I was out looking at one of the nearby hills. And as I see it, there is a silver cylindrical object. Could be an airplane, right? And I want to say going slowly over the top. And from my vantage point, it looked like it was just a couple hundred feet in the air above the mesa. But it was very large. So, I mean, you know, it was apparently large, which would mean it were closer and towards the edge of the mesa. But it was going much more slowly than I would expect an airplane to go. And again, it was a big silver cylinder. I didn't see any wings, but I wouldn't have, because I was looking at it absolutely side on. So in looking at that, I found, you know, could it have been an airplane? Sure. Was it silver like an airplane would have been? I don't know. I don't think I've had many silver airplanes flying in the early 1980s. But could it have been, you know, B-29 from the commemorative Air Force?
It was a hubcap.
It was a hubcap, yeah. Swamp gas.
That's right.
It was a weather balloon.
But go back to sleep, we won the war.
But here's one thing. I am absolutely certain, I understand that science has shown a lot of things, but I think we can prove scientifically that aliens, if they exist, are not vegan.
They're not what? You dropped out on that on your punchline.
That aliens, if they exist, are not vegan.
Okay, why is that?
Because they would have contacted us to let us know.
Clearly they're not into Fitbit either. Yeah. That we also would have known.
Yes. Yes, no CrossFit for them.
Mm-hmm.
So I hear tell you created an entirely new segment.
Maybe. We'll see how it goes. Here we go.
Stupid things that politicians say.
Yes, we're celebrating stupid things that politicians say. And this week, because it is a target-rich environment, we have one from the president and one from the vice president. Which one would you like to hear first?
Let's go with the president.
Okay, the president's up first.
Yes.
Here he is.
Not as to who can vote, but who gets to count the vote. Count the vote. Count the vote.
Do you think he wasn't aware that he said that three times? Or do you feel like it was more emphatic because he said it three times?
Well, again, I noted this in my website the other day, and how is Mr. Biden like a pirate without a compass? How is Mr. Biden reciting the alphabet like a pirate without a compass?
I don't know.
They'd both get lost at sea. Oh, it wasn't that bad. Oh, any reaction to that, Mark?
I guess I, you know, not hearing in its context, was he meaning to quote Stalin or?
Well, not intentionally, but again, I don't know that I don't know that he does anything intentionally.
Just because they have the same first name, they're simpatico. They're both named Joe.
Yeah, Uncle Joe.
And everyone to their face tells them both what a nice guy they are.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Speaking of insane, let's go to our second quote.
Let's go to our vice president, ladies and gentlemen.
It is time for us to do what we have been doing, and that time is every day.
It might be my favorite one. Do that. You want to hear it again? You want to hear it again?
Do that one a couple of times.
It is time for us to do what we have been doing, and that time is every day.
One more time.
It is time for us to do what we have been doing, and that time is every day.
Does it sound to you like she's been nipping real hard at the gin before she gets on up in the morning, maybe?
Let's hope to God
That's, you know, that's exactly what I was going to say. I mean, my image there was of her, you know, right before the speech, you know, tipping back a little pocket flask. And
again, everything about her screams drunk wine aunt.
Madam Vice President, would you like some coffee? Sure, but Irish that up a little bit for me first.
Yeah, I suspect that she's more of a tequila type of gal.
That's when she's younger. Now she just like a good beer buzz early in the morning, followed up with some wine as she sit around in her pantsuits all day. What do you think she does? Just stare at the walls? Because they don't have her doing anything.
Well, let's be honest. The vice president really doesn't do all that much. I mean, I think Mike Pence was very excited on January 6th because actually, so finally, someone's paying me some attention as the vice president. You like me. You really like me. Oh, wait.
Now, Mike Pence, if there was anyone who had the head of a 1970s G.I. Joe, it was Mike Pence.
Or a cartoon character. Vice President, yes. Race Bannon.
Yes, Race Bannon. Oh, there's a Haji joke in there, but we'll probably just stop right there. Oh my, that's pretty good.
Well, you know, as the vice, if the Haji had been around in the spring of 2020 when the whole COVID thing started, wouldn't have had to worry about the toilet paper.
There you go.
Tear a little piece off right there.
Trouble.
I'm going
to hell
for that one. Aisle seat, please.
Yes, indeed.
We're all going to hell, and I'm driving the bus, kids.
Well, despite having to do the first 13 minutes twice, I think we ended up with a pretty wonderful show. And next week, please join us at the same time and the same channel. And we'll be back with another episode of Bant to Bant. My name is John Wilder.
This is Mark.
And I'm the Mrs. Y'all come back now, you hear?